The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
David McWilliams has a new book. Does that mean we should be worried? This book is called Money, A Story of Humanity. But David McWilliams, your previous books normally come out around times of great crashes and things are going to get really bad. So does this mean now that you're going global with this story, the world is going to unravel?
Actually, I hadn't actually thought of that before. I hadn't thought the sort of apocalyptic leading indicator that is a David McWilliams book. No, this one has been a long time in the making, and it's a sort of a history of the relationship between humans and money. And I suppose, picking up on what you were just talking about there, like, I was thinking that my career over like 30 odd years, starting in the central bank, which is a place I suppose that money is in effect magicked up, has, and then you go to investment banking, then you look at the crash here, then you look at austerity, has been kind of characterized by this bizarre relationship between humans and money, the misunderstanding of it, why it's there, where it came about, all that stuff. So this book is hopefully much more, much less, let's say, a leading indicator.
And it's an incredibly readable and enjoyable story of the history of money. But you say a story of humanity. So I actually decided to look up the definition of humanity. And there's a number of them that come together. Compassionate, sympathetic or generous behaviour or disposition. The quality or state of being humane is one. There's another one, the quality or state of being human. And then you've got things like humanities that come out of that, spinning out of it, branches of learning such as philosophy, arts or languages that investigate human constructs and concerns as opposed to, and this is the important bit, natural processes such as physics or chemistry or social relations as in anthropology and economics. And anthropology and economics is where I always would have assumed you to be as you are. And yet you're into the humanities with money.
Yeah, well, I suppose that what is most fascinating about money is why. Why this technology? Why did humans come up with it, number one? And why, having come up with money about 5,000 years ago, did it spread so quickly? So why was it adopted? And then why, when you look at the way in which the world is organized, has every other way of organizing complex societies like ours gone by the wayside? So feudal ideas or religious constructs in terms of how you organize society, or even, for example, communist nirvanas, they're all kind of gone.
But even if you have communism against socialism or against capitalism, the common thing for all of them is that they all use money.
They all use money. And now what we, you know, we live in a very integrated world where the universal language is money. So if you take, for example, rickshaw drivers in New Delhi and financiers in New York, they don't speak each other's language. They don't understand each other's religions, cultures, points of reference, but they speak the language of this thing, money and value. So this notion of the universality of money, the history of money, the idea that when I began to interrogate the thesis, which is this is a technology that we came up with, what I saw were these co-evolutions of money and other things. So if you go back to the Sumerians.
The who?
The Sumerians. They're a crowd living in Mesopotamia, southern Iraq, about 5,000 years ago. And what you see is that they're the first people that embraced money. But they also embraced organized religion. They embraced and came up with writing, with numerals, with alphabets, all these sort of things, with legal systems. So it struck me that there's this extraordinary co-evolution between money and all these other things that we kind of associate with civilized society. And then you look at the Greeks, and what I was also figuring out was, why did the Greeks break the glass ceiling? Why did the Greeks come up with philosophy, democracy, republican ideas, you know, Greek way of looking at the world? And again, could it be that unlike the Egyptians, the Greeks were a monetized society, heavily monetized society? Then you look at the Romans and you think, yeah, the Romans were incredibly brilliant at conquering places, but they were also really wedded to money, to credit. And you see that in Pompeii, of the 19 or of the 27 frescoes unearthed in Pompeii, 19 of them had little pictures of mercs. Mercury, the god of money. And even the word commerce is commerx, with money. So you begin to see this extraordinary footprint of money side by side with human, let's say human striving, human invention, innovation. And then it struck me that anthropologists, so you mentioned anthropology, so I've read a lot of anthropology to do this because you're going back quite far. And of course, money is a social contract. It's part of culture. So you need to look at anthropology. And for the first about 300,000 years, anthropologists describe humans as a pyrophyte species, which we're a species that has been dictated by, adapted to, and adapted a technology called fire. And the central thread in this book is that in the last 5,000 years, we have become a plutophyte species, a species which is constantly adapted to and being adapted by this technology called money, politics and sociology, in culture, in innovation. And fascinatingly, when you look at the thread going through human history, what you see is this element, money, consistently there all the time. So it's an amazingly fascinating journey.
Okay, a few things I want to bring up to you on this. Well, you sort of debunked onto this idea that many people have that it's basically an alternative to barter, sort of a codification system.
There's no evidence of barter. I mean, the amazing thing about barter is barter was made up by economists in the 19th century. There's no evidence. It's really funny. There's no historical, archaeological or anthropological evidence for barter at all.
Isn't that a logical assumption to make, though, that when people didn't have money, what they would have done is swap things, that they would have put values on things and traded them?
Well, it's called what they say in economics. It's too much of a risk to imagine that a relatively intelligent animal, the humans, decided that we can only trade when you have something I want and I have something. They call it the mutual coincidence of wants in economics, which is an awful way of describing you want stuff and I want stuff. So what actually happened in ancient societies is that we'd all trade together and there was a day of reckoning. At the end of a month or a year or two or three years, there'd be a slate. And on that slate, it'd say, okay, Matt owes David X amount. And then we'd clear the debts and we'd start again. So there was never any idea that we can only swap if we have the things that you want and I want at the same time. The fascinating things about money is, you know, a lot of people say historically, well, you know, money is the root of all evil. But there's another way of looking at it, which is that a French sociologist called Marcel Mauss said that in order to trade, humans first had to throw down the spear. So money was an alternative to fighting. It was actually something that allowed peaceful coexistence because rather than kill you, I could actually trade with you. And we cleared the slate. So it is interesting that...
Sorry, you could kill somebody and just take all their money.
You could.
As people do.
You could, and many, many people did.
Yeah.
But the idea is that money was a tool for us to allow us to negotiate complexity in society. And that's its original function. And then there's lots of other functions apart from that. So barter, it's really funny when you actually go back and look at the archive. It just never happened. And it's one of those weird ideas that people thought, oh, that must be the way it started. It never happened.
You just threw out a phrase there that I'm sure everyone's familiar with. Money is the root of all evil. Just throw out words for me, immediate word association that you think of with money. I'll give you a couple like greed, generosity.
Yeah.
Necessity. Give me some of the words
that would come
to you.
What's interesting is that the question is whether or not money dictates human nature and changes it, or it just amplifies. So for example, if you're a generous person and you've lots of money, you will use that money generously. You will give to charities, you will help people, you will support causes. If you're a greedy person by nature, if you're a jealous person by nature, if you are in any way insecure about yourself, you might use money to reinforce that. So you might say, I'm not going to give any away. So, you know, you take a Donald Trump type person. His basic DNA is, I would say, somebody who uses money to reinforce his own position and bully others. There are plenty of other people who use money in a very objective and very, very generous way. So my sense is that money simply amplifies certain characteristics that are already embedded in people.
Well, can I throw another one at you? And I was thinking about this earlier. Choice. Money gives you choices. That it gives you choices as to how to behave or to how to live your life.
Well, the great promise of money is choice. Because the promise of money, and this is why money is so attractive, whether we like it or not, this is why money has become the dominant way of which we, where, how we deal with people, is money, the promise of money is you can change your own personal circumstances. You can have more choice, you can have more fun, you can have better kit, you've better this.
Or you could do more for other people.
You could live longer, or you could do whatever your choice happens to be. So that's what I'm saying. It tends to, I think, that it amplifies original human characteristics rather than compromises them.
Okay. Well, let's ask him another couple of things without getting too technical, perhaps. But
this is like a feckin' interrogation.
Of course
this is supposed to be a discussion about a book.
Yeah. See, I'm taking maybe a different approach to your podcast where you teach John Davis everything. So now I'm asking the questions. Anyway, the question I was going to ask is that if money is a store of value which fluctuates, who creates money?
Ah.
Because this became a big row, particularly around the time of the crash and the way that governments created money to flood the system with liquidity, as it was said.
Yeah.
Now, this is where we're getting technical. But
yeah. Well, they create the difference between money and credit. So credit is money in the form of a promise. And promises can be created out of thin air.
Hmm.
That's the first thing. Money, as created by the central bank, tends to be underpinned by a standard, a set of values, okay, that money is equivalent to, for example, a gold standard. Or in the case in Ireland, during the crash, we didn't print our own money. We used a foreign currency. In effect, the euro was a foreign currency because it was printed by somebody else. And that created the problems in Ireland and Greece and Italy, because when you don't create your own money, when you don't print your own money, you cannot then promise in the future credit. So that was one of the problems with the euro in a crisis, that it amplified flows of money into the extreme economies like ourselves and Greece on the one hand. But then when this money disappeared, we didn't have the natural ability to create money because we'd actually given it away in the Maastricht Treaty. If you look at the United States, for example, a more slightly different, totally different situation where central banks can create, it's like anything, central banks print money, but they're a monopolist. Right? So the only people who can actually print the dollar are the Federal Reserve. But in economics, a monopolist can only control the price or the quantity, but not both. So at the moment, they control the price. But who controls the quantity are commercial banks. So commercial banks, so one of the great myths, it's, I think the second or third last chapter of the book, is to explain to people that the mainstream economic view of how money is created, which is the following. If you go to university, you study monetary economics, they say things like, well, the central bank creates money, they push that money into the system, the commercial banks then take that money and they lend it out. But that's actually not how it works. It seems nice because it means that somebody's in control and humans always want to know that somebody's in control. But it's actually a totally fallacious view. So that's the push theory. What is actually happens in the world is the pull theory, that commercial banks pull the central banks all over the place. So, for example, if you decide tomorrow you want to buy a car, so you go to AIB and you say, I'd like a car loan. And the guy at AIB says, OK, fine, that's grand, Matt. We look at your salary, say, yeah, you're good for that. And we'll give you a car loan over 7 years. That money is created by the bank. They just simply lodge that money into your account. That money didn't exist yesterday, but it exists today. And this is happening all the time in billions and trillions of euros of transactions. So to answer your question, money is created by the institutions that are licensed by the central bank called commercial banks.
Which brings me to my final question, and it's the final part of your book. And I was delighted to see that you share my skepticism about cryptocurrency. Is it an enormous scam been pulled off by the tech insiders?
I think that's definitely one way of looking at it. I would say, Matt, that what is critical in the book, and I kind of arrived at this through studying, researching, you know, is what's the synthesis? What do you synthesize it down to? And the question is money a public good or a private good? And it strikes me that the history of money and everything in this book going back 5,000 years tells us that money is a public good issued by the state on behalf of the citizens by an institution called a central bank, which has given some sort of government imprimatur. Even the European Central Bank was created by the Maastricht Treaty. It has got a democratic origin. That's public money. Why? Because money is public, like the guards are public, like the Irish education system is public, like the Irish defence forces are public. You don't go to a vigilante, typically, when you get robbed, right? You go to the guards. Private money, on the other hand, is like arguing for your own private printing press. Now, I would love that. I would love if I had a thing in the basement that created coins that I could issue and I could own and nobody else. That's what cryptocurrency is about. It's about a battle to extract the power of money from the state and give it to private citizens. Now that is, going back to Nero, what all great debasers do, right? They say, I want the power. And I think money is so unbelievably potent that the notion that you would give money to the crypto bros, who are private citizens, presupposes the end of the state. So which is why, if you look, do a Venn diagram for lots of crypto bros, they tend to be pro-Putin, they tend to be anti-Western.
And now crypto pro-Trump.
Crypto is a bet. We started with Armageddon, Matt, okay? And maybe we'll get there, right? Crypto is a bet on Armageddon, that the world is going to end, right? If you believe that, off you go.
Don't know what use it'll be to you if the world ends. Have to finish. The book is called Money, A Story of Humanity. And the David McWilliams podcast is going on tour, I believe.
Yes.
You're going to be in Vicar Street next week, the 16th, in Limerick, in Galway, and in Cork in the Opera House on the 23rd, which will be about 10 days after I'm there this Friday night.
Well, you can tell me how it all went.
We do recommendation for you when we're there next Friday night. David McWilliams, thank you very much for coming in and talking about money.
Cheers, Matt.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.